listening to the 5-Minute Scholar from memorywizards.com.
There's a strange energy backstage in an old theater like this, isn't there, Ben? It feels haunted by all the stories that have been told on its stage. And there's one story in particular that actors are famously superstitious about.
You mean the Scottish play? You're not even supposed to say its real name, Macbeth, inside a theater. It's seen as a cursed story, a straightforward and bloody tale of a good man who gets a taste for power and is destroyed by his own ambition.
That's the classic interpretation. It's Shakespeare's ultimate cautionary tale about the corrupting nature of a lust for power. But as with all great stories, I think the simple explanation misses the deeper, more unsettling truth, which brings us to our central question. Is ambition the true villain of Macbeth?
It's a fantastic question, because if you look closely, Macbeth himself doesn't start out as this power-hungry monster. And that's the first key point. The real catalyst of the play is the power of suggestion. When we first meet Macbeth, he's a celebrated war hero, loyal to his king, and praised for his bravery. He shows no signs of wanting the crown. Then he stumbles across the three witches.
And they give him the prophecy that he will be king.
Exactly. They don't command him to do anything. They don't offer him a plan. They simply plant a powerful, poisonous idea in his mind. The play is a terrifying look at how a single suggestion from an outside source can unlock a dark potential that was otherwise completely dormant. The villain isn't an internal desire, but an external seed of an idea.
But even after hearing the prophecy, he hesitates, doesn't he? He's full of doubt about murdering King Duncan.
He is. He practically decides against it. And that brings us to the second crucial point, the role of manipulation. If the witches plant the seed, it is Lady Macbeth who waters it and forces it to grow. When Macbeth expresses his doubts, she attacks him at his most vulnerable point, his masculinity. She calls him a coward, questions his love for her, and famously says she would have dashed her own baby's brains out if she had sworn to do it.
That's one of the most chilling speeches in all of Shakespeare.
It is, and it works. She shames and bullies him into action. The play is as much about the dynamics of a toxic, manipulative relationship as it is about one man's ambition. He may have held the dagger, but she placed it in his hand and pointed him toward the king's chamber.
So it's not a simple story of one man's greed. It's a perfect storm of supernatural suggestion and spousal manipulation. But once he becomes king, his ambition is fulfilled. Why does everything continue to unravel?
Because this leads to the final and most important point. The play isn't really about the hunger for power. It's a profound study in guilt. The real tragedy isn't the rise to the throne, but the psychological collapse that follows. The second Duncan is dead, Macbeth is consumed. He hears voices, he can't sleep, he sees the ghost of his murdered friend Banquo sitting in his chair at a banquet. Lady Macbeth, who seems so strong, is eventually destroyed by her own subconscious, sleepwalking and trying to wash imaginary blood from her hands.
Out damn spot.
Precisely. Their ambition is achieved in the first half of the play. The entire second half is about the consequences. The true antagonist isn't a desire for the crown, it's their own fracturing minds. Their guilt is the force that unravels their sanity, isolates them from everyone, and ultimately destroys them from the inside out. Their ambition was just the crime. The guilt was the life sentence.
A perfect summary, Ben. And for our listeners who want to dive even deeper, you can find the full interactive games, summaries, and activities on memorywizards.com.
It's the perfect way to lock in what you've learned. Until next time, stay curious.